Hello and welcome to another episode of the Stumbled Upon podcast. I am your host, Kate. Happy Friday, everybody. I hope that you had a great week. And even if you didn't, I hope that you are looking forward to the weekend. Today is Valentine's Day, as I'm sure that you are aware. And so I wanted to talk about where the holiday comes from. I sort of did a little deep dive into the holiday, and it's kind of weird, honestly, where it comes from. Is strange, or I guess not that strange, but it really doesn't start where you might think that it starts. So we will be doing our deep dive into that. I understand that not everybody celebrates Valentine's Day, and a lot of people probably think that it is a stupid holiday, or I mean, at least a very commercialized holiday, and that's cool. Like, for the longest time, I felt the same. I don't really celebrate it myself, but I thought it was interesting kind of where it comes from, and you know, it's not the worst holiday to celebrate, I guess. I don't know. It's up to you whether you want to celebrate it or not. So in the beginning, it started with the Romans, we think. We're not 100% sure. There is no exact beginning date or start of the holiday that historians can really pinpoint, but they think it begins with the Romans because from February 13th through the 15th, they celebrated a holiday called Lupercalia. It was a feast to celebrate fertility. So what they would do is the men would sacrifice a goat, which represented fertility, and also a dog, which represented purification. And as a side note, that made me really sad because, like, dogs, I don't know. I don't think of dogs as being like a sacrificial animal, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, so what they would do is they would sacrifice those two animals, right? And then women, or the women of the village or town or whatever, would get in line, and the men would go through and use the hides from the dead animals and whip the women, and then also the crop fields. And this was supposed to make both of those things more fertile. So it was supposed to help make sure to yield good agricultural crops, and then also to help women get pregnant. And because the festival itself, Lupercalia, was dedicated to Faunus, who was the god of agriculture. So this kind of makes sense, you know, to make a sacrifice and then do a ritual with that sacrifice so that you can get a result that is favorable to what you're looking to do. The women who would line up would do that voluntarily because they wanted to get pregnant. So it's not like it was necessarily a violent sort of thing. I mean, it was violent in the sense of like a sacrifice was being made, but not so violent in the sense that women were forced to participate against their will. At least that's what it said when I was reading about it. So the young men would also draw their names, or excuse me, the young men would also draw names of women from a jar, and then they would couple up with whoever they drew for the rest of the celebration. Now, I did read two different facts about this. So one source said that they would just couple up for the remainder of the celebration, and another source said that they would couple up for an entire year. So I'm not really sure which one is the actual truth of the matter, but either way, they would couple up, and if it was a good match, then they would stay together and get married. And if it was a bad match, then they would just go their separate ways and draw names again the next year. Which I was thinking about it, and if it was a bad match, like, what if you drew the same person's name? Surely there was enough people involved that you wouldn't draw the same person's name twice, right? Or maybe if you did draw the same person's name twice, then it was like a sign that you needed to be with that person. I don't know. I'm reading way too much into this. So either way, that's what they would do. Then Emperor Claudius II executed two men named Valentine on February 14th of different years in the 3rd century. So this is where I think a lot of us probably start hearing about the story. So I remember when I was in school, maybe, hearing that Valentine's Day was celebrated because some dude dude named Valentine got killed. So that's sort of the vague recollection that I have of the holiday origin story. And so this part of the story, or this area of the story, stated that the Catholic Church honored their martyrdom with the celebration of St. Valentine's Day. So the emperor killed these two different dudes on the same day, both named Valentine, which is just bizarre if you think about it. Like, how likely is that? I don't know. And then the legends of who Valentine was, though, kind of vary. So it's not, again, it's not entirely clear who this guy was or who these men were, because, again, it said that there were two different people who got killed. So I don't actually know. So one legend says that Valentine was a priest during the 3rd century, and Emperor Claudius decided that single men made better soldiers than family men who had wives and children. So he outlawed marriage, and Valentine didn't agree with that, so he continued to marry people in secret, and then when he was discovered, Claudius ordered his death. So that's sort of one legend of who this guy was. The other legend that I found was that he was killed for attempting to help Christians escape harsh Roman prisons, which I guess makes sense as to why the Catholic Church would make him a saint if he was helping Christians, I guess. I don't know. Before his death, he sent the first Valentine, allegedly, after he fell in love with his jailer's daughter, and she would come visit him and while he was in prison. And he signed his letter to her, his final letter to her, "From your Valentine." So that's the story there. Again, it's not clear if these were actual real things, or I don't know. It's not that it's made up, but you know how when a story gets told over and over and over again and details get lost or embellished or whatever the case may be. So I don't know that these are necessarily false stories, but they are stories. So bear that in mind. In any case, every story that they have about who this Valentine guy was depict him as a hero and a romantic. So that's sort of where the feelings around Valentine's Day get involved, I suppose. So if you think about it, it logically makes sense, going from a fertility celebration and then becoming associated with this man who was just trying to help people fall in love, or he fell in love himself, and it was sort of like a very tragic situation with his own love or lost love, whatever it may be. So that's, I guess, how you can see the progression of it. It makes sense, I guess. Then in the 5th century, Pope Gelasius I combined St. Valentine's Day with Lupercalia because he was trying to merge pagan rituals with Christian holidays. Because I don't know if you know this, this is another rabbit hole deep dive that I think I want to go down as well. It's a little bit controversial, probably, but basically in the early days, the Christian religion was not super popular, and most people celebrated pagan festivals and did pagan rituals and that kind of thing. So paganism was the main religion, I guess, of the day. Yeah, we'll call it a religion. I have to do a deep dive into this topic because I'm not 100% sure that I'm accurate with what I'm saying. But as far as like calling it a religion or not, I guess it is a religion. I guess I could just look that up. Okay, according to Google, yes, paganism is a religion, and it's a growing spiritual movement with many varied beliefs and practices. Paganism is a nature-based religion that includes polytheistic and pantheistic beliefs. It's inspired by the pre-Christian religions of Europe, North Africa, and West Asia. So there's more information on Google about that. You can look it up yourself if you want to, or I think I'm going to do a deep dive so in the future on that. But anyway, so paganism was sort of the main religion, right, of the early days. And when the Christian church, Catholic church, whatever, decided that they wanted to be number one, one of the things that they did to sort of transition people from paganism to Christianity is they merged Christian holidays with the festivals that pagans were already celebrating, so that it made it easier for them to convert. So one of the ones that they did, or that they decided to do, was Valentine's Day, right? So they took this Lupercalia feast that people were already celebrating and already used to celebrating on February 14th or around February 14th, and they decided that it was now St. Valentine's Day, so that they could still have their celebration, but they were doing it for a different reason, quote unquote Christian reason. So they also did that with several other holidays. The ones that come to my mind first are Easter being a big one, and Christmas actually was another one. So I think I'll do a deep dive into that in the future, is like our modern holidays and where they actually came from. That might actually be several parts. I don't know that I could do all of them in one episode. A future Kate's problem. So anyway, when they converted Lupercalia to Valentine's or Saint Valentine's Day, it was still a drunken party, right? But it maintained itself as a day of fertility, and then eventually it turned into a day about love. So the love part of it, I think, is a more modern take on the holiday. So moving forward in time to the Middle Ages, and you have Chaucer and Shakespeare romanticizing this holiday in their works. So Chaucer wrote a poem in 1375 called Parliament of Fowls, and it was the first recording of St. Valentine's Day as a romantic celebration. So this really caused the holiday to gain popularity in Britain and then spread throughout Europe through these works. And what's interesting, or what I thought was interesting, was that at this time, people thought that bird mating season started in the middle of February. So they kind of equated this season with love, or yeah, I guess love. I don't know. I don't know if you'd call bird mating season love, but whatever you want to call it. If you're going to romanticize it, then yes, we could call it love. So that belief that they had about the birds sort of helped them attach even more meaning to this holiday that, again, didn't start off as being about love, if that makes sense. Then, after 1400, written Valentines started to appear. In the middle of the 18th century, it was common for friends and lovers of all social classes to exchange small tokens of affection or handwritten notes. And this got me thinking about exchanging Valentines in school, or I guess Valentines and or candy and or treats in school. Do you remember that? I had this memory sort of surface, this childhood memory surface of, I think we, in art class maybe, I think it was like a cross class sort of, you know, when you would do one thing in one class and then it kind of married or paired with something that you did in another class. And so I think in art class, maybe we had to bring in shoe boxes from home, and then we decorated them for Valentine's Day. So we decorated them, you know, with hearts and whatever else. And then on Valentine's Day, you brought your Valentine's in for the whole class, right? And I remember, like, when you were choosing your Valentine to bring in, you know, the pack, you'd buy the packs of Valentines, and they would be around a certain theme. So, you know, a certain popular singer or a popular actor or a popular, whatever the popular like Disney movie was at the time, or something to that effect, right? Or Disney princesses, right? Because they're always kind of around. And I remember overanalyzing this as a kid, and this probably speaks to my own adult anxiety issues, right? But I remember as a kid being really concerned that I picked the correct theme for my Valentine's, right? So you didn't want to pick the wrong theme and then be ostracized as a kid, right? Because kids are mean. And I remember, you know, if you pick the wrong thing, like, oh, that's too nerdy, or, you know, whatever the case may be, or you're like being a baby or whatever. And yeah, I just remember there was I put a lot of pressure on myself to make sure I got the right Valentine's. And then I think at some point we stopped doing that. I don't remember what, maybe by middle school, we stopped doing class Valentine's, and it was just you brought in Valentine's for people that you liked. I think I have a hard time remembering middle school because middle school sucks. But I think if I'm remembering correctly, once we got out of elementary school, in middle school, you just gave Valentine's to the people that you liked. So your friends, or I guess your crush or whatever. And I remember, you know, if you didn't get very many Valentines, you know, it was sort of like an unspoken thing. Like, you weren't a cool kid. I was not a cool kid in middle school. So I did not get very many Valentines. That's fine. I don't care. And then I remember in high school, I think as a result of being, you know, when you like say, oh, well, I'm not going to participate in that because I'm choosing not to. But really, you're like, I don't want to participate in that because I don't want to get rejected. Right. And obviously, you can see it with a clear lens now as an adult looking back on being like an angsty teen or whatever. But I think I remember in high school creating what I called anti-Valentine's Day with my friends. And we would come to school, you know, when Valentine's fell on a weekday, and we would come to school dressed in all black and, you know, shun the holiday sort of thing, because we just didn't, we were too cool for that. And so it's just funny to think about how this random Roman celebration has become something that we kind of all grow up with and navigate as children. But anyway, so that's my side ramble, side quest about Valentine's cards. In 1840, Esther A. Howland began selling the first mass-produced Valentines in America. She made them with real lace, ribbons, and colorful pictures. So they were different from like your everyday card, right? And she is called the mother of the Valentine in some of the sources that I was reading about the holiday. And so thank you to Esther for becoming the mother of the Valentine, I guess, the modern Valentine. In 1913, Hallmark Cards Company began mass producing Valentine's cards. And today, the company estimates that 145 million Valentines are sent each year. So that brings Valentine's Day into the second most card sending holiday behind Christmas. So obviously, Christmas cards are number one. And I didn't actually look up how much of a difference there was between the two holidays. I would assume it's fairly significant because I think more people send Christmas cards than Valentine's cards. As well as, you know, you're not going to send a Valentine to your aunt. I mean, you might, but like, I'm thinking, you know, aunts, uncles, cousins, they you send Christmas cards to extended family, but I'm sure Valentine's cards just get sent to the core, right? Or your close friends or whatever the case may be. And then I thought something, an interesting fact about the cards that I found was that ready-made cards were a way for people to express their emotions in a time when direct expression of one's feelings was discouraged. So it's interesting to think about how, you know, we're in this time period where you're not really forward with how you feel about other people. I assume this is in a romantic sense, but I mean, it could also be in a friendship sense. And so sending these cards was a way to express your love or your gratitude or whatever the case may be, your affection for the people that were closest to you. And then, as I'm sure you're wondering, how does Cupid get involved in all of this? The Roman god Cupid has roots in Greek mythology as the god of love, who was called Eros. So Eros was a handsome immortal in Greek mythology, and he would play with the emotions of both gods and mortals by shooting either golden arrows to incite love or leaden arrows to sow aversion. So his origin story is a little bit murky as well. There are several different couplings within Greek mythology that are said to result in his parentage, which there's like three or four different potential Greek god couples that create Eros. And so I'm not going to list them all. But anyway, that's where he comes from. And then the Romans took Eros and turned him into Cupid. It wasn't until the Hellenistic period that he began to be portrayed as the mischievous cherub he'd become on Valentine's. And I believe it was in the Victorian era, if I'm remembering correctly, when he actually first started appearing on Valentine's. They thought that his iconography kind of meshed well with the whole idea of love and affection that the holiday ultimately becomes being known for. So in conclusion, I mean, this holiday is whatever. I think it's a holiday that you either, not that you either love it or hate it. I think it's a holiday that you either celebrate or you're kind of indifferent to. I don't really think it's a super contested holiday. I know that I myself don't really celebrate it, and I also don't, but I don't get upset about not celebrating it either. It's just another day, honestly. But if you do celebrate it, then that's great, and I love that for you. And if you don't celebrate it and you think it's stupid, that's great too, because I don't think it matters either way, honestly. And I think maybe we should consider putting less pressure on these made-up holidays in general, because if you think about where it came from and where it is today, it has changed quite a lot. And I just don't think that the societal pressure that we put on people to be in a couple or be in a relationship or whatever the case may be is necessarily a good thing. And if you don't want to be in a relationship, that's fine. And if you do, that's fine too. But I just think that maybe we should not make it as big of a deal as we do, you know? I don't know, just some food for thought. And then the other thing that I think we should all think about is celebrating the people that we love kind of just whenever, not on specific days. So yeah, it's important to celebrate your loved ones on their birthdays and on Valentine's Day if you want to, or on anniversary days. But I think it's important to remember that we should be acknowledging the people that we care about in our everyday lives and not just on these like specific holidays, right? Because I think especially now it's easy to be disconnected, and making sure it's not that you have to tell people. If you want to tell people you love them all day long, then that's fine. Like, go for it. But I'm not even advocating that necessarily, just that you show up for people in your life, even if it's just a random Tuesday to bring somebody coffee, you know, like just little acts of kindness, I think, go a long way. And I think maybe if we had more of that, then it would feel less shitty in the world. You know what I mean? So just something to think about, something to chew on for now. If you have a topic that you would like me to discuss or do a deep dive on, I would love for you to email it to stumbledpod@gmail.com. Let me know what your thoughts are. Let me know if you have something interesting to share, interesting fact or whatever. And if not, I hope that you all enjoy your Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day to those of you that don't have anyone telling you happy Valentine's Day to. Happy anti-Valentine's Day to those that think it's stupid. So either way, I hope you have a great rest of your day and a great weekend, and I will see you next Friday. Bye!